The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. And welcome. This is Comics League International. This is episode 35. We're going to be talking about the Netflix series, Jessica Jones. And with me today to talk about it is Scott.
Hello.
How you doing, Scott?
Good.
Okay, so we were about to have the discussion, and this is probably going to be important for whoever's listening to the show to know what we're talking about. Because, I mean, we're recording this on, like, I can't even remember the date. I have a child.
it's the 24th.
Thank you. And this show's been out for 5 days now.
Yeah.
And I've managed to watch the first 6 episodes. And Scott?
Yeah, I've watched all 13 the whole way through.
That is awesome. Like, and you know, we were talking about, like, well, what should we talk about? And, you know, because I know some people who may be listening to this, maybe haven't had a chance. And I myself, I don't really want to be spoilered on the end of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've read the comics, and you know, I kind of feel like I know where this is going.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah.
I've read in other articles that it follows the story of the comics pretty closely.
Yeah. Yeah. So and yeah. I don't even know. Like, so I guess what we'll kind of do is, because, like, with anything I have lots of praise for this show.
Yeah.
But I do have a few things that, like, I do kind of, like, might not like as much.
Sure.
And some of these things may be corrected, like, oh, once I see the entire show, like, there you go. And some of the things, like, maybe I'm just being too blah about it, in which case, Scott, feel free to just tell me to shut up.
Okay.
and some things might, you know, I might just, I think I know why some of the things that aren't intriguing me as much as I feel they should. I feel like I know why, and
yeah,
we'll get into that. So I guess that's kind of my overall view of the show, and I guess also the spoiler warning of the first episodes. I want to kind of tear apart for a little bit. In
okay,
the
sure.
end, we may have some slip ups. We might go into it, you know, a little bit. Who knows? Maybe I haven't even asked Scott about this, but who knows? Maybe in the next week or so, maybe we'll do a reunion episode and talk about the last seven episodes.
Seven.
I'm good at math too. I'm going to blame everything on my 6-month-old for the next year. But that's enough rambling out of me. Scott, why don't you tell us what your big picture view of the show was, and then we'll kind of reel it into those first 6 episodes.
So overall, I really liked it. I think the standout things for me were the casting, all the actors. Christian Ritter. I didn't like Carrie Ann Moss as much, but I think that was her acting. Like, she was portraying that character very authentically, and I just didn't like
that
her
character. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and then David Tennant. Those are kind of the main three.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really good. And then, so seeing those actors on the screen really compelled me to watch it all, and just, like, I was very engrossed, and I watched like 4 or 5 episodes in a row without a break. it was just a really great series.
It really was. So far it is.
So yeah, yeah. Well, the first 6 episodes are also very compelling. because I can at least contrast the first episode of Jessica Jones and the first episode of Daredevil, which is the other Marvel comic series on Netflix.
Now, on Facebook, you said you weren't as much of a fan of...
I watched the first episode of Daredevil, and it didn't compel me as much.
Really? Because I gotta say, like, the first episode of Daredevil compelled me a lot more than the first episode of Alias. And that's not to be a disservice to Alias, because I'm gonna call it Alias a few times, because that was the comic book name. But so if I do that, just sub in, you know, Jessica Jones, because I'm not talking about the old Jennifer Garner series. It's just because being a fan of those comics, I guess this is the main catch up for the series, because there's so much I want to talk about, and the main thing I think that is hurting the momentum of the show for me is the Alias comic holds a great place in my heart. It's one of the first Brian Michael Bendis comics I read. I really enjoyed it. I love the fact that here was this character who you didn't really know about, but kind of had the touches on all the little parts of the Marvel comic universe that weren't necessarily being showcased in the mainstream comics of the day. And by the time do they ever call David Tennant the Purple Man?
I don't think they call him the Purple Man.
Okay, because I'll probably end up calling him Purple Man a few times in here, as opposed to Kilgrave.
But he definitely wears purple the whole way through.
He does. He does. Yeah. But by the time you got to that Kilgrave arc, you knew that something had happened in her past. You knew it wasn't necessarily good. And you really cared for the character. So when you started hearing about why she is the way she is, you know, it was big and it mattered. And it was like, wow. Yeah. But that was also pretty much the final arc of the series.
Okay.
And so here in this, it's kind of it starting off on. And so it's...
Yeah.
And not even an issue of timing. Because, yeah, I mean, this is probably the go-to punch. But the fact that the main thrust of these first six episodes have been Jessica finding Kilgrave, which has been excellent. But it's kind of like, well, I already kind of know all this, so there's no real mystery to me.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I've read elsewhere and probably watched a lot of YouTube videos about it. Just because it interested me so much, I wanted to hear what other people were thinking about the show. And one of the criticisms is that it cuts out a lot of the comic book stuff and some of Jessica Jones's other cases as a PI. So you don't get to see her like doing her kind of PI thing as much.
Yeah.
As the comic book, which I would have really enjoyed too, because the few times you did see her working as a PI, just her interactions with customers and how she's kind of not great at customer service.
Yeah, she's not really good with people.
With people in general. But just really sardonic and cynical.
And I like the fact that they captured in the show, one of the same things that was in it, is this character is not a Buffy clone.
No, yeah, she's... I was thinking of her as more of like a really bad Buffy that's had a lot of trauma.
Yeah, yeah, but not like a Faith Buffy either, which I guess would be the easiest comparison.
Yeah.
But it strikes a nice voice, and it's a voice... I mean, don't get me wrong, I love myself some strong women in comics. Like, that's something I'm pushing for all the time. But since Buffy came out, there's a lot of Buffy clones, and it hurts the material.
Yeah, if it's just that rehashing, you know, it's not diversity. It's just like, oh, let's try and make Buffy Lightning Strike cry.
Exactly. This is what strong women are like. This.
Yeah.
It's a different feeling to it. Even though you could argue there are a lot of those like trappings, but it feels different to me.
Yeah. Like, I always found because I've watched all of Buffy and read some of the comics as well. I'm like halfway through
the continuation series as well. Yeah,
but it was always more like fantastical, and I guess they played up the supernatural and like superhuman elements of it more. Whereas in this series, Jessica Jones, those are played down a lot.
Yeah.
And there's more of a noir feel just around, because she's a PI.
It's
very scaled back on the superhero part. And then totally different characters, I think. Where, like, Buffy was a teenage girl, whereas Jessica Jones is, like, 30-ish. And has had, like, a lot more experiences. Like, traumatic experiences as well.
Yes.
But yeah, I wish it was a longer series, to be honest. I wish we had have seen more cases.
In the first six episodes, I do kind of... And this, I'm going to try and say this in a way that it's not just repeating the same thing I just said, but I do wish we had a bit more of her working on her own stuff and maybe stretching out the introduction of Kilgrave and the Purple Man plot.
Yeah, because that's right. Like, that's the first episode, pretty much.
Can we
talk about the first episode?
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it. Actually, before we get into it, do we want to talk a little bit about the casting?
Yeah, sure.
Go for it.
So I was looking it up, and the creator, or I guess the adapter of the series for Netflix, is Melissa Rosenberg.
Yes.
And then...
I've seen the name, but I don't know what else she's done.
I read that she wrote the screenplay for the Twilight films.
Okay.
Which I'm like, I'm glad that she's doing something else now, because...
Yeah, I mean, to be completely fair, I've never seen any of the Twilight movies. Maybe their art, they don't strike me as such.
They're terrible. Like, the Twilight books are terrible, and the Twilight films are also terrible, but I don't think that's Melissa Rosenberg's fault. I think that's the author of the books' fault. Jessica Meyer, what was her name? Something. Susan Meyer is the author of Twilight books. They're terrible. I've also read them. They're terrible. but I think Melissa Rosenberg did her best to adapt them to the screen.
Yeah, everyone's got to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but she goes back. She's got some writing credits going back to 93 in television with Class of 96, which I don't know. But then Party of Five, Dr. Quinn, did some Outer Limits and Dark Skies stuff. Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, which I can't remember if that's the Kevin Sorbo one or not. A few episodes here and there of like Ally McBeal and Boston Public. Did 8 episodes of Dexter.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, is now the creator, showrunner, executive producer, and writer of Jessica Jones. So, you know, that's outside of the Twilight ones, which are pretty much all of her film work except for two things.
Right. Yeah, I think she's had a lot more experience in TV.
Yeah.
And I really liked what she did in Jessica Jones, and I really liked the casting. So if I guess she was, there's probably a casting director as well that I can't remember the name of right now. but yeah, I think at the center of that, Christian Ritter as Jessica Jones was amazing. That was like
she's really good.
Yeah, the best casting decision, I think.
I want to share something with you, and I kind of stand by this, but I don't think it matters as much seeing as how they went with the show. Because, I mean, Kristen, the only other thing I really know Kristen Ritter from is from Breaking Bad. Okay. And, I mean, she is excellent in this. She's fantastic. But here's the thing. She's so pretty. And I'm not going to, denigrate or go more than that, but she is a striking, gorgeous woman. And when I first saw that she was cast as Jessica Jones, and this kind of goes back to me in the series, I'm going like, I never really thought of Jessica Jones as stunningly attractive. And so that kind of threw me for a while. I'm gonna be like, really her? Because I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not. It's a TV series, and it's gonna be the lead actress, so I know we're not gonna get anyone, you know, plain. But I never envisioned this character as someone who would, you know, like, you would just be like, I, you know, in a very polite way, I'm just, you almost look like a work of art.
I guess I never really thought about her that way. I'm not sure. I guess she's not my type.
I guess not. But, well, let me tell you. She's very striking, and in an almost distracting way sometimes. Okay. I mean, but then, like I said, this was my kind of earlier thoughts, and I kind of like say, like, I don't want to say I was wrong. I have a point there, but seeing what they did in the first six episodes, because she is the character, but it's a slightly different take on the character, and I don't feel in this version of it the kind of, you know what, Jessica Jones. In reality, you're basically average at best in just all things. Like, yeah. I don't think that's as much of a theme in the TV show as it was in the comic.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah, and so therefore it's like, no, complete hands off, because, yeah, she owns the screen.
Yeah, it is really her kind of... She's holding it all together.
Yes.
And I guess I... When I saw it was Christian Ritter, I'm like, I'm definitely watching this show, just because I also saw her, I saw her in Breaking Bad, but also in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. It was a comedy series. It had James Vanderbeek in it as well. Just, it was like comedy all the way through.
Yeah, I remember seeing the ad.
She was
for
just
that.
Very. Right. She was very sardonic in that role, and just sarcastic, and kind of like, she wasn't a likable character, but then in being kind of terrible in as the bee in Apartment 23, you came to like her, and I kind of thought that with Jessica Jones as well, because as a person, she's not very likable.
Yeah, no, but that's part of the charm, yeah.
That's part of the charm, yeah. So I was like, oh, she can totally do this, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, and I also saw Christian Ritter in Veronica Mars.
I've never watched that, but I hear it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's very good. I really like her as an actress, and I guess that's what...
And what I've really liked about the show so far is, I mean, not just not just Jessica Jones, not just Kristen Ritter, but like, it's not just her as a performer, it's the chemistry between her and everyone else in the show.
Yeah.
It works. It feels like when her and Luke Cage are together, it's you can feel it. When it's her and
Trish
Walker,
her sister.
Yeah, like, it's just, it's so good, like, all those little things there,
even like her and minor characters, like, there's the twins upstairs who are
weird,
like noisy and weird, and I guess in episode 2 she first interacts with them and tells them to shut up, and then from that point it's like they have come into the story,
yeah,
just because she told him to shut up. But yeah, her interactions with characters are really authentic, and just a lot of things get portrayed through the acting.
Yeah,
it's all very compelling, I thought. Well, I thought also an amazing casting decision was Kilgrave.
My goodness.
Was Kilgrave British in the comic book series?
I don't think so.
Right. Like, I assume that was a thing that had to be adapted just for David Tennant.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, I don't like Doctor Who as much as everyone else does.
Okay.
You know, like, I've watched him, like, okay, sure, but it's I don't know why. But David Tennant has always, anything I've seen him in, mostly the Doctor Who stuff. He's incredibly good, and like I think it's the second episode where he just walks into the family's home. And like that's like I'm just watching that going like, holy crap, like this right here is amazing.
Yeah,
like just watching him be him is just terrifying, and yet
it's so terrifying.
Yeah, and the way
it's just the way his presence on screen and just the way he uses the words and the way he kind of moves as well.
Yeah, like he seems like a predatory lizard.
Yeah,
I guess, or maybe a hawk. I don't know, but it's just something terrifying that you never know what'll happen with.
And I've only seen David Tennant play an evil character in the Harry Potter movies. He was in the fourth one, The Goblet of Fire.
I don't even remember.
Only he was Mad-Eye Moody. He was like the Polyjuice version of Mad-Eye Moody in the fourth movie. Yeah, and so he's only in it for like a flashback scene and like the reveal. We're spoiling Harry Potter now, but I'm sure everyone's seen it.
Oh no! Yeah,
and him being super evil in that, like a Death Eater Voldemort supporter, and I was like, yeah, that's super crazy. And then after watching Jessica Jones, I heard that he auditioned for the NBC series of Hannibal. It's like a Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, I've seen some of that,
Yeah, so I watched all of that series as well. And the actor that was cast as Hannibal is really great. But now it makes me wonder, like, what would David Tennant be like as Hannibal in that role?
He would feel too young.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
There's reasons that he wasn't cast. But
I want to see him as Iago now. Yeah. Like, because Shakespeare is one of Shakespeare's greatest villains to me, and David Tennant is...
I thought you meant Iago in Aladdin. Like, that is Gilbert Godfrey's character. You can't take it away from Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah, I'm going to start a new campaign for him to just re-record all the Gilbert Godfrey dialogue in everything. The animated series. Yeah. I'm sure David Tennant would be up for it.
Well, so... But yeah, no, I think David Tennant can convincingly play evil characters, and it's such a contrast to the Doctor.
Oh yeah, yeah, like everything about him. It's almost like he's an actor.
Yeah, yeah. No.
There's a lot of actors. John Cusack. Yeah, I like John Cusack a lot. He's always John Cusack, and I like watching John Cusack, and he's compelling. But David Tennant, he's a completely different person.
Yeah. Totally different.
Yeah. And I mean, I gotta throw some love on Mike Coulter as Luke Cage. The only other thing I've seen him in is he played, have you seen The Good Wife?
Oh, I've seen some episodes.
He plays like a sophisticated gangster in that. And he's very good in it, but it's a lot of I'm standing around and being articulate and not the image you would expect from a head of a gang. And here he's, you know, very different, but I like him. So far, up to episode 6, I don't think they've done anything that compelling with Luke Cage yet. I like all the scenes he's in, and they've got that great dynamic, but, you know, it's been mostly about... Obviously, since this is Jessica Jones' series, it's been mostly about how he relates to her. So he doesn't, other than, like, I run a bar, there's really not much going for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and then how much of his backstory is...
At the end of episode 6 is the one where we find out that it's the reveal from Jessica to him about, and this is where the big spoiler comes in, kids, that she killed his wife, which we'd already seen in flashbacks, but we hadn't quite learned yet.
Because in like the second episode, she like ends up, or the second or the third, she ends up sleeping with Luke Cage, and it just kind of happens, as Jessica describes it. But she
was it that the second episode? I watched the first two back to back. It was one of the, it was really early on. They're like, nope.
Yeah, so it must have been the second episode.
Yep.
And then she goes into the bathroom and opens the mirror cupboard and sees that a photo of his dead wife.
Yeah.
And Jessica knows who that is. It's because Kilgrave made her kill the. Her name's Reva, I guess.
Sure, sounds good. Yeah, to me.
Yeah, like they come. It comes up more. Yeah, and then she's super guilty about it, and then she can't tell him. That was kind of like a thread in the story.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, it's good. It works. Like, it was one of those things that it's kind of like, here's our time bomb, and you know it's going to go off.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like, we just got to wait.
I kind of liked that. Because we, like, the audience...
Wait, did you say did or didn't? I couldn't quite...
Oh, sorry. The audience knows that it's going to happen, that time bomb's going to go off in their relationship. But yeah. I still liked seeing it play out. And yeah. I think that was down to the actors.
Yes, no. I think... I'm neutral on it. Like, I think it went really well. But it's kind of like this thing of... Being halfway through it, I kind of think like, well, this is my prediction, and I'm even covering up your face on the Skype, so I don't even see it. But thinking this will happen, and then probably around maybe episode 8 or 9, they'll kind of, okay, we've got to work together to do something, so they can kind of be in a place to have a relationship ready for episode 13, unless Christian Ritter is unavailable for the Luke Cage series. In which case, they won't be in a relationship, and yada, yada, yada.
Right, that's what I was thinking. So the reason they're not using Luke Cage as much is because they've got a Luke Cage series planned.
Yeah.
For Netflix. As part of the, four series Defenders deal that they're making with Netflix. So yeah, the first is Daredevil, and then now it's Jessica Jones. And then Luke Cage, and then someone else that I've never heard of.
Iron Fist.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm excited about. Like, there's been recent internet talks about whether or not it'll be the Iron Fist one, whether or not they're going to do the Punisher instead. And I'm just saying, I hope it's Iron Fist, because I really want the mystic world of Marvel to come out. I'm tired of all this, like, no, magic is only science you don't understand yet, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, bring some magic. I want some magic. I want it. Thor's a god. He's not an alien. He's a god. Anyone who says Thor is an alien, you're wrong. Even if you're writing it, he's a god.
Yeah.
Suck it up, Marvel. Own it.
Yeah, they... Even in Jessica Jones, the things... They explain things with science, I think, kind of. Not... Like, the backstories for characters are very like, glossed over, but their power... Jessica Jones is like, it was an accident. And Luke Cage was like, "Oh, it was an experiment," but that's all the backstory you get for their power. Yeah.
I wonder if they're gonna do the Luke Cage origin from the comics.
I don't know. Yeah,
where he was basically like a prison experiment.
Yeah, okay. That's
kind of like, hey, why don't we do this to black people because we don't really care? Is one of the ways it's been portrayed.
Oh my god!
yeah, like Where I haven't read those exact issues. I've read the kind of feedback and the way they've kind of like, I don't know if this counts as a retcon or one of the original envisioning. It was kind of a, hey, just so you know, the Tuskegee Airmen experiment from the American past was a really crappy thing.
Yeah.
What if someone did that on prisoners and it gave them superhero powers? Huh.
So it's like trying to make it good somehow?
No, it's kind of like basically saying that, you know, the what was done was bad.
Yeah.
But here's someone who's kind of using that to still triumph. Okay. Which I guess if you say it that way still kind of sounds like it's sending a not the best message. But, you know.
It's, yeah, like it's hard. I think it's hard with superhero fiction.
Yeah. I mean, kind of anything I think that can kind of shed a light on like, hey, by the way, not everything that's been done to people in the name of doing things good is good. Good. You know, like, ah.
But I think, I guess it always depends on the character and their backstory, but a lot of superhero backstories are, like, trauma.
Yeah.
From a trauma, and then they kind of build a kind of superhero identity around that.
Yeah, I got one more question about the casting. You've seen all the way through.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're already, like, half hour into this, and we haven't even talked about the episodes yet.
Right.
I know, but... I think it might have even been episode one. The guy who played the police detective who was interrogating Jessica Jones.
Yes.
Clark Peters. Does he show up some more?
Yes. Yeah, he shows up some more.
Because I don't know if you've watched The Wire or Tremé.
I've watched some of The Wire.
He's one of the main characters in that.
Okay.
And he's also just one of those guys who, like, whenever he's on screen, I'm like, Lester Freeman! It's cool, Lester Smooth! All right, what do you mean he's not showing up anymore? Come on, bring him back. I'm so excited he's in a Marvel thing. I want his role to be more.
Yeah.
But
yeah. He gets some more. It's pretty cool.
He makes me happy. Episodes?
Okay, yeah, let's go into it.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I guess the last casting thing is Carrie Ann Moss as Hogarth, like the lawyer.
Yeah.
I hate her so much, but like, it was very good acting is the reason.
Yeah.
I hated the character so much, you know.
Like, I think Carrie Ann Moss is doing a great job. I mean, the entire cast is doing a good job.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that character's. The actress who plays that character's wife.
Yeah, okay. The she starts a divorce proceeding.
Yeah, who's a doctor.
She's a doctor.
Yeah, did you ever watch Deadwood?
No.
She's Calamity Jane on Deadwood, who's a drunk person who swears a lot, and she's... fantastic.
Wow.
And kind of since then, she's also just kind of like Clark Peters. Whenever she's on anything, I'm like, hey, it's Calamity Jane! Come on, swear some more. I know you can.
Yeah.
So then to see her be like, I'm the sensitive doctor, I'm like, ah, come on. And this is like the third or fourth show I've seen where she's also like the, she's also... A lesbian. It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think majority of the stuff I've seen her in is like, huh. I wonder if that's just like a typecast thing, or I know nothing about her personal life whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, huh. It's interesting that same actress keeps getting a similar role.
Well, I guess maybe her agent or something. Like, maybe there's a... She applies for those roles?
Maybe.
But the character of Hogarth was originally a man in the comic book series, right?
I don't even... Jerry Hogarth.
Yeah, I heard... Well, from what I read, it was originally a man in the series. And it definitely... The character definitely has a lot of, like, male power fantasy built into it.
Yeah. I remember this guy now. He's an Iron Fist character who kind of keeps coming back and forth. So it's like, yeah. Huh. I mean, I'll be honest. The main thing I kept on thinking about this character was, since it's a lawyer character, I kept on hoping, like, rather than her name being Hogarth, I kept trying to convince myself, like, no, it was probably Jennifer Walters? Yeah. No, it's definitely the She-Hulk.
Because the She-Hulk? No.
Because She-Hulk's a lawyer, and like, yeah, Oh, she can be Bruce Banner's cousin, and they can get, like, Mark Ruffalo in there, like, oh no, she got injured! I'm the only person here who can give her a blood transfusion. What's gonna happen? And I'd be perfectly fine with, Carrie Ann Moss playing She-Hulk.
I don't think it's
not gonna happen at all. I mean, it was, but
yeah,
I kept on thinking of female lawyers in the Marvel universe, and that's what I came up with.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So in the first episode,
yes,
we get a lot of these character interactions. But the little blurb on Netflix here, it says Jessica Jones is hired to find a pretty NYU student who's vanished, but it turns out to be more than a simple missing persons case. So that's how the episode starts. Yeah, and it's definitely jumping straight into the Kilgrave.
It really is. Yeah. And this is, I mean, it's a great introduction to the world, and it's also so far the only episode that I would see that seems kind of like a episodic in nature.
Yeah. Like, it definitely has a three-act structure to the episode.
Yes, yes. Like, and if this were on, like, daily PI drama or weekly PI drama, it would kind of fit right in. As yeah. Like, and now it's over. She was brainwashed. The end. You know, and then we'd never see these characters again. But,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, if we jump right to the ending of the episode, that's how it's like, oh, it's over. And like the missing NYU student is going home with her parents.
Yes, yes.
And then that's not what happens.
No.
And then Hope, the NYU student, is a recurring character from that point on too, which was definitely a surprise for me, just because I thought, like, oh, this is a detective story. That's the end of that character.
Yeah, no, I thought so too.
Yeah.
I thought even, and then they kind of did the friend with the lawyer and that's going on. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a motivation. But I think they use it to great extent, and this is kind of jump to future episodes, but that this character and what happened to her is the reason they can't just kill Kilgrave.
Yeah. That's true. That's like, pretty much it. Like, Jessica's first instinct when she kind of, like, finds out that it's Kilgrave is to run away. That's just her first instinct, because you can't, like, even though Jessica Jones has strength and she can kind of fly, it's, like, totally useless against Kilgrave because he can just control people.
Exactly.
And she's had that experience in her past, and she got away from it. So then she thought Kilgrave was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then him just showing up again, she's like, okay, like, I'm out of here. She's kind of in the process of leaving without telling anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Why? I can't remember. Why doesn't she just leave? I forget.
I think
this is what happens when you binge a show.
Right. I think it's either Trish... at that point it's like an estranged sister relationship.
Yeah.
And so, like Trish shows up, and then she's kind of like, you know, like, you should be the hero. And then I think Jessica Jones is kind of like, I can't leave this girl to this monster that I experienced.
Oh, that was it. It was, yeah, the...
Yeah,
kind of having to go back to save Hope.
Right. Yeah, because she was going to leave, and then she's like, oh, like, I can't leave Hope.
Yeah, like calling on the way to go to Europe or Singapore.
She tries to use Hope's credit card, like, she and the parents' credit card. Like, she tries to use that to buy plane tickets, and the card's been declined, and she's just like, oh, like. I think Jessica Jones commits a lot of fraud.
I think so.
In as a PI,
as a part of daily life.
Yeah, but like her doing that, I was like, oh, like, you're really just abandoning her. And then she's like, oh, I can't do it. And it's interesting seeing that, like, the kind of, like, victimhood that Jessica Jones has, and that, like, overriding her sense of heroism, because she wants to be the hero. But from her experience, she's like, that's not a good idea. Like, she has a lot of conflicting
Yeah. At least in terms of Kilgrave, her need for personal safety.
Yeah.
Is, I guess with the later episodes, not as much, but it's right there neck and neck, sometimes winning, sometimes not, with her desire for being a hero or doing the right thing.
Yeah. And then in the first episode and a few more, she's still kind of having PTSD flashbacks of Kilgrave.
Yeah.
Like even giving her commands.
All throughout the first six episodes that I've seen, that's definitely a kind of go-to thing. Because that's right, episode six ends with the kind of, here's her house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just even in episode one, when she's going to rescue Hope, she gets to the hotel room, and like she's walking in to find Hope, and then Kilgrave says like, "Oh, like you've come back to me," and then she turns around and he's not there.
Yeah,
that was just like that flash. I was like, "Oh no!" And then I was like, "Oh, it's just PTSD." But it was also kind of horrifying, you know.
It's done really well with the way, especially in those first few episodes where everything did get that kind of purple tint to it.
Yeah.
And they seem to have lost it once, like, Kilgrave is fully introduced.
That's true.
But...
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how it would show flashbacks in purple.
Yeah.
So it gives you a sense of something... Something not being right.
Does that continue?
It's not as clear, not as used in the later episodes. I think because Kilgrave is there, like wearing purple.
Is it wrong that I'm really kind of disappointed they didn't just bite the bullet and say like, nope, he's purple because.
Like, he's all purple?
In the comic books, his skin is purple.
Oh, wow.
That's why he's the purple man, because he's purple.
Wow. Okay, no, that, like, I guess that's in keeping with, like, not putting magic in the show kind of thing. Yeah. A lot of the decisions that they make, I guess, are to keep it, like, more grounded in realism.
Yeah, and I get that, and, you know... I'm not going to say they made the wrong decision, but there's a part of me that says, like, listen, you're making a TV show about a guy who can get a buzzsaw and put it up to his skin and not get cut,
yeah.
And a girl who has super strength and can kind of sort of fly.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to say, and here's a guy who has mind and the main villain's a guy who has mind control powers, if you want to say, like, and you know what? His skin's purple. I'm pretty sure people will go there.
Yeah, I think, and also there's the Hulk. Like, it's still part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They have kind of, like, characters that are more inhuman.
Yeah.
In appearance. Aha!
Are you teasing us?
Yeah, yeah. But I think with Jessica Jones, I mean... practically for filming and like on a lower budget, they don't want to have to do makeup to make a guy purple like every episode.
True.
But in the series as well, it's kind of more like scaled back and noir and
yeah,
like a PI detective series. So I think that's part of it too. Just
it makes kind sense.
And also I like just seeing David Tennant, like the actor. Doing like him just being there was very atmospheric and kind of scary. I don't know how that
is.
If he was like purple as well, I'm not sure.
It would be a little distracting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I think, you know, if anyone can kind of make you forget just by sheer performance that they are in fact dyed purple, David Tennant might be the guy, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
maybe. I'm not... I understand why they didn't do it. It is kind of nutso, but...
Yeah. So, episode one ends with Hope shooting her parents.
I liked Hope Bob, too.
Hope's the NYU student, the one that she tries to help.
Yes.
And yeah, that, it's just such a huge shock. And I, like, also for Jessica Jones, she was escaping as well, like, just at that moment. She'd rescued Hope, and she's like, now I can leave and escape from Kilgrave. And then Hope kills her parents, and it's just like, like, what do I do? And she gets called into questioning with the police, and you get that that cop that you really like.
Clark Peters.
Yeah.
Cool, Lester Smooth.
He's the one questioning her. And so then from that point, Jessica Jones has vowed to prove Hope's innocence. This is the blurb from episode two on Netflix. And even though it means tracking down a terrifying figure from her own past, she knows it's Kilgrave. She has to track him down to prove Hope's innocence. And that's, I guess, Hope is the reason she stays in New York to fight Kilgrave.
Yeah, and this is when... oh, I'm getting two and three confused. Yeah. Because we got the part about... Yeah, three is the one... Two is the one where we find out about the kidney patient, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so creepy.
Yes, super creepy. So Jessica talks more with her sister...
Yeah.
In this episode as well, like I think this is the episode where they're kind of reconnecting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I like you get more of the backstory through their conversation. So her sister Trish is like, "But he's dead, right?" Like, and Jessica's like, "No, like he must have survived." There was a you see kind of in flashbacks that there was a bus accident,
and at first no one's believing Jessica. Which,
yeah.
I mean, again, like, this is just one of those things I kind of go back to with the show of, as much as I like it, there are little moments where I kind of go, like, I don't know, like, you know, since we, there's a lot of things which we know, so even though the show is a mystery, we're being kind of given a lot of the answers.
Yeah.
You know, we're not really asked to figure things out or, like, kind of... People keep not believing Jessica or not believing something, but we're shown that it's right. So it kind of, you know, spins that wheel a little too hard sometimes, I feel.
Yeah, I can agree, I think. Like, but I think that's also part of Jessica's character, that she doesn't build credibility at all, really. She just kind of...
True.
She just does her thing and leaves... The chips where they lie.
Yeah, she doesn't really care what position her actions leave other people.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the series.
Yeah, yeah. I think by the end, she, like, I'm not spoiling too much, but she's moving away from being that type of person.
As if she's on some kind of hero's journey.
She becomes less defensive.
And more of a defender.
Yeah, but I think that was, all, like, watching the whole series, that was a point of frustration for me. Because as the audience, you can see how the characters are moving around in the kind of big picture thing.
Yeah.
And you look at Jessica, I'm like, if she was more of a leader, or she just even, like, effectively communicated with people, some of the stuff that goes wrong, like, wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And that was a big kind of thing for the comic as well, and kind of one of the points of, like, she has those flaws. She's definitely a flawed character.
Yeah, definitely.
They did in the comics, and this doesn't, I mean, because of the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe is set up, this isn't really a part of it, but she was also kind of a wannabe in the comics. Which right now there's really not too much to want to be before her incident, before her accident.
Yeah.
Or before Purple Man took her. But kind of one of the things that led to that in the comic was her basically being like, I've got these, you know, powers that aren't big league or anything, but they're powers. I'm going to be a hero.
Okay.
And that just not really working out for her.
Yeah, you... I don't think... I'm not sure if it's come up in the first six episodes, but that character trait of, like, idealism is definitely not portrayed at all in Jessica Jones, I don't think.
Yeah.
Even like in this series, even in flashbacks, it's never Jessica being idealistic.
It's Trish.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I was going to say. Trish is the one that portrays that. And there's even a flashback that you haven't seen, but they're in Trish's apartment.
They showed the one where they're like, hey, you should wear this outfit.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. So Trish is holding the costume.
The Jewel, like, character. And I loved that. I was like, that's straight out of the comics.
Yeah, I knew it was straight out of the comics, too, because I'd just seen a YouTube video kind of like exploring the comics. And I was like, oh, that's the Gem costume. And,
yeah, Jewel.
Or the Jewel. Yeah, Jewel costume.
And,
yeah. I'm, and then like, Jessica, like, totally dismisses it.
Yeah.
And she'd rather, fight crime as a sandwich.
Yes. She's
working that temporary job as a advertising sandwich.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of sets up their relationship. I mean, right from the moment we see Trish, I forget which episode this was in, but we see, I really want to call her Patsy, by the way, just because that's, you know, she's Hellcat.
Okay.
Once we see her learning the Krav Maga, once we see her learning, that's like, oh, she's going to be a crime fighter. That's what she wants to be. She wants to be, you know, she wants to be Hellcat.
Yeah. Maybe that'll come up. I was a little disappointed in episode two, Trish wants to, because Hope is getting destroyed in the media. And so then Trish wants to help her.
And this is in episode three, right? Where she does the on-air interview.
I think that's actually the end of episode two. Okay. She does the on-air interview with Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hogarth comes in at the end because she's taken Hope on as a client and is like, oh, like the delusion is fully formed. Like, oh, she's crazy.
Yeah.
And Trish tries to be like, oh no, like it sounds believable, you know, and so Hogarth is trying to build some kind of case from that, like, and not have to defend an insanity plea. She's trying to use Trish, really. Hogarth, the lawyer, tries to use people, like, all the time.
Yeah.
But Trish gets kind of pushed a little too far, and she calls out Kilgrave and is like, oh, he's emasculine and a weakling and, terrible, and really insults him.
Yep, yep.
Which is right out of
The Hard Way.
Yeah. And so then in episode three, because Kilgrave calls in the show in episode two. That's kind of the end of episode two. And he's like, oh, I'm going to get you, Trish.
Yeah.
Like anonymously, but in his British accent, it's clearly him. So then in episode three, he sends someone to kill her.
Sends the cop.
A cop comes to kill Trish. And you saw her training with Krav Maga, but then in that cop trying to kill her, she wasn't as strong as...
Yeah, no, I felt that same way. I was like, huh, yeah. I mean...
I was a little disappointed that it's like, oh, she wasn't strong enough to save herself.
Yeah, like, that's one of those things that, like... And I mean, admittedly, I was thinking about this. They do go out of their way to kind of set up, like, oh, he's not just a cop. He was, you know, super badass cop. Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah. But there was that kind of thing of, like, I don't know, man. Then have two cops come in, and one she beats the crap out of real quick, and
the other. Yeah, I wanted. It kind of took away a bit of Trish's power, I thought.
They keep doing that because there was that one too, and then the one where it's episode five or six, but they almost get Kilgrave. And then, like, the security agency talks. And you have, you know, they have their little, like, stun shocker things.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jessica is taking a lot of shocks. And the cop, Will Simpson.
Yeah.
He also gets a lot of shocks. But I think, like, Trish gets, like, one. And she's like, oh, I'm out of commission.
That might be. But Trish comments on that as well. She has a lot of guilt for going down in one shock.
Oh, okay, that comes up again?
That comes up again, yeah. So that you must, that must just be episode 6, like the end.
Yeah, because it happens at the end, but it's just, it's in a thing of like, man, they like, she's the most motivated to get out there and do something, but they're also letting her be the one who's like, she's basically the weight.
Yeah, yeah, which is a little disappointing, but I think, because I've seen the whole series now, by the end of the series, her and Jessica are kind of like on an even playing field, I think. Not in power, but at least in like, or not in strength, but in power and control. I think they're okay. Both kind of like even.
Yeah. That'll be interesting, because if that happens, that would be a really interesting counterbalance to if they do bring in Iron Fist, because Luke Cage and Iron Fist, Luke Cage is just the powerhouse, and Iron Fist is, you know, the martial artist.
Yeah.
And then they often teamed up with the Daughters of the Dragon, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing, who, you know, Misty Knight is a cop with a gun and a robotic arm, therefore she's also super strong, and Colleen Wing is another martial artist. So I wonder, and I haven't even seen all of Jessica Jones, so I'm just talking about but I wonder if they're going to kind of use that juxtaposition of here's the guys who kind of work that way and here's the gals who kind of work this way.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just you know, thinking of ideas. We've gone almost an hour, so I guess we should just kind of quickly
wrap it up.
Or like sum up the next few episodes, because there's so much meat on this bone.
Yeah, a lot. We talked about episode 3. It said for the blurb, it won't be easy to acquire or deploy, but Jessica thinks she's found a weapon to use against Kilgrave.
Dun, dun, Luke, dun.
And then Luke and Jessica bond over their similarities.
And I like, one of the things I really like about this show, and I feel like I'm going to run a risk of sounding like a douchey white male, but...
Yeah.
But... One of the things I like about it is it has the characters who are having kind of the power on the good guys' side, in a way, are women. And it's not... The show isn't going out of its way to make a statement in-universe for that.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, sometimes I feel with shows... When they have, in media, when they have strong female characters, there's that kind of need to, like, make it into a thing. Like, you know, with capital letters. And, you know, I'm thinking back to, like, the first episode of Supergirl.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, well, there's just lots of lip service played to the fact that we are women and we are strong and we are doing this and blah, blah, blah. And... sometimes it does kind of veer into the, like, men are keeping us down or stupid, and sometimes it doesn't. But I really like how in this show, it's like, no, we're the ones in charge. Like, when it's Trish and Jessica talking about what they're going to do, and even when Will's kind of like, just so you guys know, I do have... some kind of background in this, maybe, and like, we'll let you know when we need your opinion.
Yeah, well, because Will wants to kill Kilgrave. That's his thing, right? He's just, I just want to kill him.
Yeah.
And Jessica wants to save Hope, mm-hmm. and she needs evidence that Kilgrave exists.
Yes, and I just like that this is being done in a way where it feels more powerful by not having to wave a flag.
Yeah,
it's like, this is just part of who these characters are and how they go. Let the action speak for themselves. But sorry,
and I think it's a good point. But the way they do that in this show is scaling it back and just being on an individual character basis.
Because
like Jessica Jones doesn't want to be like that female empowerment stereotype or the like ideal of that. She just kind of wants to get through the day, and she's, you know, always self-medicating on alcohol. There's a lot of, like, her just kind of surviving.
Yeah, yeah.
Which yeah. I think it shows her vulnerability as well as the strength she does have, kind of, like, playing off against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does, like, it makes her, like, it makes her more of a real person.
And now that you say that, I kind of think, like, even the way that, so far, Trish is portrayed, her past as some kind of, I mean, pop star isn't quite the word, but it's as some type of TV icon.
Yeah.
Where it almost seems kind of like a teen Disney type,
yeah.
It's So Raven type yeah. show.
Yeah, or like just Lizzie McGuire or something.
Exactly. Something yeah. that's kind of, you know, not really deep and very, very popcorn-y, but...
Yeah.
And that she's trying to also escape from that and from kind of being remembered as like, hey, you're this one-note figure.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a... I don't know, a somehow thematically similar but very different I just want to move on as Jessica Jones.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about it like that.
There, I just thought about it when you were talking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely with Trish, Patsy as well. She's trying to move away from
Patsy.
Her past as being Patsy and also away from her mother.
Yes.
Who is very kind of like, she was her acting coach and her manager. Mm-hmm. So her mother kind of controlled that Patsy image.
Mm-hmm.
And then now Trish has her own talk show and she's totally different.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much of that is developed, if at all, in the remaining 7 episodes.
Right, like it comes out a bit. And I mean, even episode 2, when Trish has the live radio interview with Hope, and she's kind of freaked out because Kilgrave has just threatened her.
Yeah.
They're in the lobby of the building, and a fan, like a Patsy fan,
yep,
comes up to her and like touches her shoulder, and so... Trish turns around and, like, punches this guy because she's afraid it's a Kilgrave zombie that's going to come
up. Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's not really explained. Like, what... I was like, why is this fan wanting her autograph? And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, maybe it's part of the talk show. But then
yeah.
it's more than that. It's kind of like a creepy old dude who likes her as a tween. but kind of, like... more harmless than
yeah,
an
just
assassin sent to kill her, but still
a fan coming behind her and
yeah,
like,
yeah,
hits
and then
that
assault is used as the kind of trigger to let the cop in her house, Will Simpson, when the cop tries to kill her.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know, it's kind of plausible, and that's what gets her vulnerability up.
It's really
yeah.
good, isn't it?
Yeah, and then, like, even little things kind of, like, play off into bigger things later.
The show has had a great way, I think, of kind of usually around the same time I start thinking, like, well, geez, why don't they just do this? They address it on the show.
Yeah, like, I thought that, too.
Yeah, about, like, I remember kind of... I know there was a moment where I did kind of think, like, why don't you just shoot the guy? And they kind of bring up, like, why don't we just shoot him? Like, oh, because blah, blah, blah. And there is one other question. I can't remember what it was now, so it's kind of a pointless thing to bring up. But there have been more than one occasion where I've had that thought, and then the show answers it.
Yeah, I think they've really thought through the writing.
Yes.
And just what the characters are thinking as well.
Yeah. Even kind of like, and this is, we don't have much signal, but kind of going backwards, seeing why perhaps Trish wasn't able to have any type of effect on Will Simpson when he was trying to get to her. Like, that's kind of also explained in universe of him being formal special forces, tactical,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I guess... having seen the whole series as well, like, the Will Simpson character kind of annoys me just because of the way that he interacts with Trish. But, like, it kind of makes sense, and I actually think, no, like, super spoilers, but his character, I think, is playing into season two of Jessica Jones.
Yeah,
like, you'll have to keep watching it, but, like...
Well, because I did a quick look to see, like, wait a minute, what? The name sounds familiar, but I can't quite place it, and then I realized why and who that character is in the comics.
Okay.
Even though it's, you know, a completely different version of him. You know, it's kind of like, huh, I wonder if they're going to... Because they use that character who is Nuke in the comics...
Okay.
I wonder if they were going to do any of that, either on here or on Daredevil.
Yeah. I like, my opinion is they're going to continue his character somehow.
Yeah, because that would... Especially if they're bringing in the Punisher. I mean, it just seems... If you have this character and you're bringing in the Punisher in a future season of Daredevil, it would be a misstep to not kind of have, like, hey, look at what the army does, or some type of examination. But, you know, who knows? Maybe more of those things are answered in upcoming episodes of this.
Yeah, yeah. They do kind of leave some stuff hanging just because it's like, we have to deal with Kilgrave, so... Like, no spoilers, but yeah, that plot is kind of left hanging, I think.
I guess we should go on to episode, what, 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, we're kind of up to 4. 4 is actually one of my favorite ones, too.
and they have which, what you said, I'm not sure if you'd be a fan of the kind of blossoming relationship between Will and Trish.
No, I'm just in retrospect, I'm not a fan of it. He seemed like an okay character, I think. In these first few episodes. 4.
Yeah,
well, but it's still that very uneasy feeling because he tried to kill her. He tried to kill Trish the episode before, and then he comes back with a lot of remorse.
I like that.
I liked it too, but I don't know if
I liked the relationship forming with that as its original output, but liked the kind
of... It did seem authentic. It's just, I wanted like a different thing for Trish, I guess.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah, like, but having a love interest didn't diminish her character, which is good, I think.
No,
but yeah, that happens.
I mean,
her and Will Simpson are involved.
I really, I liked in episode 4 because we have what's the guy's name? Malcolm, right?
Malcolm, yes.
Yeah, the whole Malcolm thing. I've liked it so far. All the stuff they've done with him.
I like Malcolm, too. I think it's a good character to have.
Yeah. I do kind of wish, because they kind of mentioned, like, oh, he wasn't like this until 4 months ago. I wish, and maybe I missed it, but I wish they'd kind of had a little bit more of here's who he was before the Purple Man got to him.
Mm. Yeah, that comes up, right?
They kind of mentioned it briefly, I think, either in episode... 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, kind of looking after my boy while watching these. So they might have said it and I just kind of missed it, but it was like, I just remember hearing, like, oh, he wasn't like this until 4 months ago. And now he is. But it was like, do we get more of who he was? Like what was he doing? What was his life like? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, from
does it play a part in other episodes?
Yeah, Malcolm. Okay. Malcolm is a mainstay character, and in the first few episodes, it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah,
but Jessica definitely cares about him.
Definitely, yeah.
And so that shows up. But Also, I think in episode 4, so the blurb, a new case demands attention as Jessica tries to find out who's spying on her for Kilgrave. Trisha's radio show yields unexpected consequences. So I guess
that was unexpected attack, consequences. Probably.
Yeah, that's the relationship with Will.
Yeah,
I think. And then, so yeah, the new case was my favorite part of this episode. It was this rich lady who's also also like a jewelry designer, and the rich lady hires Jessica Jones to spy on her husband to see if he's cheating.
I like that.
Yeah, I liked seeing her be a PI as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I liked it.
And also just the fact that here's a little bit that so far this has kind of been the only part of the show that seems to highlight that this is a shared universe.
Yeah.
There's little like drips and drabs here and there, but this was kind of the one of like, no, not everyone likes the fact that there are superheroes.
Yeah,
this is
a
thing,
and the destruction of New York too.
Yeah,
that comes up a lot more. They talk about the Green Man and his friends tearing up New York and the aliens. Yep, yeah,
the flag waver.
Yeah. I like how they talk about the other characters. In the Marvel universe.
Although I like it, part of me does wish they would kind of use their actual names at some point.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because it kind of, like, in a way, it almost reminds me of, like, back in the day where, like, Marvel and DC would kind of wink and nod at each other. And you'd have, like, a reporter show up, obviously being an homage to Clark Kent Superman. And, like, in a Marvel comic, like, and you'd have them think, like, maybe they need some help. Nope, look like they have it there. Wink! And they'd have stuff like that. I'm kind of like, guys, you have the rights to them. You can just say, like, yeah, that big green guy, or, you know, Captain America. Like,
yeah,
like,
no,
say the words Tony Stark.
I think
like, it, have
I
someone think use a Stark Tech cell phone.
Yeah, well, there was one time there was a kid in a Captain America costume, like running around a park.
Yeah, and I hear that's like a like what was it, a link with Daredevil?
Oh, okay.
I've heard that. Like, I saw something like that. Like, it was the same kid or the same night. See, so like, see, look, they're the same world.
The same. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have to finish watching Daredevil if I can like slog through the first part.
I like Daredevil.
Yeah, I knew some of the crossover references, and they're a lot more clear in some other episodes. But no, the reason I think that they don't reference other superheroes' names is it's still they're trying to create their own story to kind of like stand on its own merit. I just think they don't want to use the interconnected continuity as like a prop up for the show.
I get that. But at the same time, I'm kind of like going to the thing of like the whole point of the Marvel thing is to be like everything's connected.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I don't think like it should be like oh, how are we going to defeat the Purple Man? And then you have a flying magic hammer come just wonk him in the head. Like, hey, well, that was easy. But, like, just a little bit more. Just like sprinkle on some of that fairy dust. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I can understand.
Like I said, even just, like, if whatever phones they were using. Like, and I haven't really even noticed their phones, so I guess not as much product placement. But, like, have them be Stark Tech phones. Or Stark Enterprises, or whatever they are.
Yeah.
You know? Like, have, just throw away news in the background. You know? Again, to go to Tony Stark, because I guess he'd be the easiest one. Now, in technology news today, Tony Stark has announced that their new operating system will be going up and blah, 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 blah. And just have that, like, be, and now back to the Trish Walker show. Like, something, just be like, yeah, yeah, it is all connected. Or someone someone mentioned, and this was an article I read, of just, since so much of this show deals with lawyers, even just kind of mentioning, like, the Murdoch and Nelson.
Yeah, yeah.
Even just name dropping that, you know?
Yeah, I guess,
like,
there is, like, in universe, Hogarth has her own, like, practice, and it's, like, way up there in, like, corporate law and high profit kind of, like, clients. Whereas, like, Murdoch is, like, way down there. He, like, the first episode, he just opens his firm.
Exactly. But, I mean, there could even be, like, just a little thing of, you know, like, and don't forget, you have that 3 o'clock meeting with Mr. Nelson.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even just...
It would totally be cool.
Like, throw just a little dart in there of, like, it's King. Like, it doesn't have to be like, oh my goodness, not the genius lawyer Matt Murdock, savior of Hell's Kitchen. Like, it doesn't need to go that far. Just, like, a little bit.
Yeah. There, you know? Yeah, there could be a little bit more. There's some, but not a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which I liked, but...
Yeah, I would like to have that radius dialed up just a touch is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I know.
So, the client that Jessica gets in this episode, her motivation is she wants to kill Jessica. So Jessica's worried that the client is controlled by Kilgrave, but it turns out that she's angry about her mother dying in the alien attack on New York.
Yeah.
From the first Avengers movie. And so then she lures Jessica to this, like, abandoned house. And then has plastic set up on the ground and a gun, and she's gonna kill Jessica that way. But Jessica kind of, like, guiles her way out of it, and ends up, like, trashing the house and, you know, yelling at the lady, telling her off. Yeah. Which I just thought that was really cool too.
I liked it.
Yeah,
it was really good. Like, I like how they did, like, because even up until, I guess, the moment where she's calling the woman on the phone, she's not quite sure what's going on, or she still thinks Kilgrave is like, hey, wait a minute, that woman's right over here.
Yeah, like, she's in the... I've followed the husband to the mistress's house, and yet the woman is in there with the husband.
Yeah.
And so she's like, what's going on? And then, it comes out. And Jessica's like, wow, like, I thought Kilgrave was doing this, but, like, Kilgrave isn't even this stupid, like, ugh. It was kind of a stupid plan.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that, though, that, like, a lot of this are kind of stupid people doing not-so-smart things. It's kind of a lot of, you know, who she has to deal with.
Yeah, that's just her, like, reality.
Yeah.
But then you also find out in that episode that Malcolm is the spy, the one that's been stalking her.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I kept on kind of hoping that, like, they would make a reference to him being, like, wow, apparently he was, you know, kind of an in-demand wedding photographer.
Yeah, it would have been
something.
Yeah, you don't get much of that. Well, so in episode 5, they follow him at 10 a.m. every morning, right? Like,
really like those sequences.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that's also another PI thing that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Like, her just tailing someone, and
those
kind of, like, noir tropes, but being used in a superhero genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I mean, this kind of shows into the thing of people, when we say, you know, superhero genre, there's so many different aspects that can be done.
This show really shows that as well. It portrays the noir aspect.
Exactly, because this is a superhero show, but you're never going to get this confused with Iron Man.
Yeah, no, totally different.
And then again, you had the most recent Captain America, which was very much a spy thriller.
Yeah. Yeah, that's even the contrast between the two Captain America films. Very yes, different.
Yes.
In tone.
One of the things I really liked, and I think this was from episode 5, is just, it might have been either 5 or 6, but once they kind of get to Malcolm, and he kind of comes out of it, and there's been this kind of ongoing discussion among the survivors group of Kilgrave, yeah, of just like, one of the worst aspects of it is that he says you want something, and you know you don't, but you do.
Yeah, like that's all you can think about.
Yeah, he says smile, and you're going to smile.
Yeah.
He says you want me to come in, and you want him to come in, even though you know you don't want him to.
Yeah. I think I heard that as, I think it was on YouTube, on the Screen Junkies, they were talking about Jessica Jones. And that aspect of Kilgrave, the insidious part, where he's making you want things that you don't want, that are not good for you.
Yeah.
But it's... it, and then it comes through Jessica Jones that she has a lot of trauma because of her being aware of what's happening, but then being kind of brainwashed into wanting these things that are terrible.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate culmination is she kills Luke's wife. She kills a lady at the time. She didn't know who she was, but yeah, she kills this woman. And part of her wanted that.
And this kind of gets into something that, you know, I'll learn as I watch the show, but what kind of worries, not worries, but I'll be curious to see where it goes. In the comics, the experience Jessica had to go through was horrific. But horrific in a not easy to define kind of way.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about that. Like, Kilgrave is an interesting kind of villain in that he's just very unique. But also, like, unique for the superhero genre, but also very common in kind of, like, real life, if you connect it back to the real world.
Yeah.
To me, he just seemed like an abusive, like, ex-boyfriend kind of archetype. So he's this man who is, you know, like, there's a lot of casually brutal things in the show.
Yes.
And then trauma, victimization, that all comes up. And Kilgrave is the cause of a lot of those things in the show. And yeah, he's from that article I read on Jezebel. It was a good article though.
I didn't say anything.
Kilgrave is like every woman's worst nightmare because he's a rapist and a stalker, just like unrepenting, unrelenting at all, stalker, and he has a power to control everything. Everything that you do, like he exerts this kind of control, even when he's not directly there. He was controlling Malcolm to spy on Jessica Jones, and he can send people to attack you, even if he's not there himself. And you can never know who to trust just because he has all of this control. And I thought if you link it back to kind of a real world thing, he's like a horrible ex-boyfriend who was abusive and evil. And even though Jessica got away from this relationship, if she were a real person, if it was just a normal woman, Jessica, she gets away from this evil ex-boyfriend, but he won't stop stalking her. He's obsessed. He'll do everything he can to just get at her.
I just thought
as a villain in a superhero movie, that's very unique.
Yes. For the movies,
But also, I just thought it's also not uncommon what in the real world.
What I remember about the comics, and I mean, I haven't read some of these in a while, so I could be getting this wrong, but one of the things I remember, and, you know, hopefully I'm right, is one of the things that really stuck with me was that there was never any, or there was very little consummation of their relationship. Like, because it was a power trip. Like, and in a, because what he got off on in the comics, and I could be misremembering this, is he wanted her to want him and wanted to deny her that as well. Like, because so it was still like, you know, a rape mentally.
Yeah.
And kind of the idea of him having, because at that point he got her when she was a costumed superhero, of having that costumed superhero in his thrall and wanting him and denying her what he told her she wanted. It was almost that way. It was more like, maybe it never got to the physical side of thing, but the invasiveness of it and the mental aspect of it somehow was more horrific. Kind of demean yourself to make yourself want me, but I'm still going to make you feel bad about yourself because I'm not going to let you enjoy what I'm saying you're wanting.
Yeah, I guess I can see that, and I can understand why in comic books they wouldn't want to go there, like, fully.
In this comic they might have, but it just somehow stuck with me, because, you know, they also played up the kind of mental side of things as well.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it was a sometimes he would, sometimes he wouldn't, but that was definitely a part of it.
I don't think it's a spoiler, but in the show they definitely go there. Like, he's a rapist.
Yeah.
And Jessica Jones also confronts him with that. Like, there are times that she can, and she's like, you're a rapist. Like, what you do to women you control is rape them. And then Kilgrave is like, no, like, you know, he's delusional. And so he doesn't see what he does as rape. He also doesn't, Kilgrave doesn't see himself as a murderer. But he compels people to kill themselves, and he compels other people to commit murder. So
I'll be interested to see how that's done. Like, my gut reaction to hearing that is to kind of be like, I don't know, I kind of would rather him just be a twisted, amoral son of a bitch. Like, you know, kind of like the you rape people and you murder people. Well, they're there for me to rape and murder, so why should I care?
Right. It kind of goes in that way. I'll have to let you finish the series.
Maybe we can do a part two on our, wow, we've hit an hour and a half.
Yeah, right. Okay, we should finish up.
I guess the last little bit of question I would have is, like, and this is something, you know, because right now the most kind of unsettling scene was the scene where he walks into the home with the two parents and the two kids, and he just says, kids, get in the closet.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that was the most terrifying thing so far. But and then the, they...
And, yeah, like, making the little girl and the little boy go into the closet. The little girl wets herself
because
she, you know, she needed to go, and Kilgrave doesn't care.
And then he told her to go in the closet.
Yeah, and then the mom comes up, and
so she's even like, if she wanted to hold it, she didn't have the choice.
And the mom comes up, is like, "What are you doing?" And Kilgrave's like, oh, no, they're fine. And then the mom
they're fine.
Is like, oh, like, oh, okay, they're fine. And she can't do anything about it. But I even that just one, that one extra, that one, like, bit part actor really showed concern for her children.
Yeah.
But and Kilgrave made the mother not care.
And it, I... Just,
yeah, the way he compels people.
I'll be honest, the fact that they didn't for a while keep reusing that same setting kind of disappointed me. Like, yeah, I mean, just because it's, and don't get me wrong, it would not have been pretty to look at, but I was kind of interested to see the decay of that family. How far are they going to go to show what he is willing to do and what he is willing to put up with?
Yeah.
And the fact that it's just kind of set up there, but then there's no real follow through.
Yeah, like, maybe that was their intention, but it would have gotten very dark if
I mean, to me that's kind of,
yeah,
That's my ultimate question for this show, is the way Kilgrave has become in the comics through the Alias series, is he became one of the... He legitimately became one of the darkest creations, one of the darkest villains, just by the like actual exploration of how would someone with this power, who was not afraid of abusing it, use. And then that was kind of my main thing when I heard like they're doing Jessica Jones, is how far are they really willing to go with this unsettling aspect of it? And so far, it's been okay. It's been good. But I keep, and this, you know, I'm wondering if when they continue the series, because where I'm at, they just had the chance meeting of Jessica and Kilgrave, which I was kind of hoping would be a little bit more involved. I'll be honest there.
Right. That's at the... When is that?
It's either 5 or 6 where she goes out and she's... where she's saving Malcolm.
Yes.
She's saving him from muggers, and he sees her and is like, hey!
Right, yeah, that's... So that's the flashback. That's how it all starts.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how he first gets her.
Yeah, and I was kind of hoping for, like I said, I'm not sure what I wanted, but I was hoping for something a bit more involved. You know? Yeah. Like something a little less like, what a happy coincidence.
Yeah, I think it was kind of orchestrated by Kilgrave. I think the muggers were probably compelled by Kilgrave.
Really?
Yeah, that's how... I'm not sure if I'm getting more information, but I...
Maybe.
From later on, but I... Yeah, that's what my impression, at least.
Yeah, but, the thing I'm kind of hoping for is when they explore that relationship, I'm hoping they really earn the... I hope they put the audience in a very, very, very unsettling place. Like, it does not... And yet it does not need to be simple TV. And it, you know... I mean, it needs to just make people, like, almost... To me, it almost needs to be that point of like, man, that was really good. I don't want to watch episode 9 again. Like, it needs to be Requiem, the end sequence of Requiem for a Dream, and I couldn't say that for like 3 words. that level of just like, that was really good and powerful. I need to cry for a little bit now. Like,
okay.
Yeah. Because it's...
Well, yeah, I think you have a lot to look forward to.
I think that's probably the best way to end the show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking with me for this long.
No worries.
This might be the newest longest episode, and it's 'cause the show's really good, right?
It's really good. It's a very good show.
And I do think if you stick with Daredevil, you'll find it's very different. I like it as much. From a comics reader, I would say one of the things I think Daredevil achieves is it's got so much material to choose from that it can kind of pick what it wants without relying on one single storyline. Okay. Whereas, like I said, probably so far, the biggest criticism I would have of Jessica Jones is just as a guy who's going and reading this, who kind of is familiar with the material, it stays close enough where it's like, I kind of know the tune a little bit too well, which isn't really a criticism of the show.
Yeah, no, and for me, not having read the comic at all, I saw the twist and I was surprised by them, and I liked experiencing it for the first time.
Did it make you want to go out and read the comic?
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah,
I think you should check it out. I think you should.
I think there's a new comic as well, just accompanying the show.
Probably.
And so I also want to read that one just to see.
You should,
and go back to Alias.
The writer of this also wrote some of the new Avengers, which featured Luke Cage. Brian Michael Bendis and this series is probably the reason Luke Cage is a prominent character in the Marvel Universe nowadays. Because he had kind of faded from glory. And he was like, nope, I love this guy. I'm bringing him back. Bringing him back in Jessica Jones, and now he's going to be an Avenger.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining me today, Scott.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking Jessica Jones.
Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Anything you want to push?
Not right now. I keep meaning to start a YouTube channel, but at some point that's going to happen, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Let us know.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my own little self-service plug for a little bit because I started this Indiegogo campaign recently. I'm trying to get a print run of my fantasy novel Deadly Troubadours going, and I'll do my best to put a link up on this podcast so you can just click on that and go there. But basically, order my novel. It's fantasy. It's fun. I'm trying to get a print edition. There's some neat little perks into it, and you can get a nice sketch by the cover artist in the cover of the book if you pay a little extra. But that's roughly $15 plus shipping and handling, and you'll get a beautiful paperback. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, okay. Awesome. I'd love that.
All right, thank you, Scott.
Okay, thanks, Brad.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.